हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओके Then Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 1, the fullness of Bhagavan. Okay, Anucheda 91. Similarly, it is said, Tasmaj Yanena Sahitam Yatva Svatmanam Uddhava Yana Vijnana Sampanno Bhaja Mam Bhakti Bhavataha. Therefore, Uddhava, after knowing your Atma through jnana, endowed with knowledge and realization of Brahman, worship me with devotion. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.5. Svatmanam means the jiva. Jnana and vijnana are knowledge related to Brahman. What more can be said? The Kumaras and Sukadev are examples of Atmaramas progressing to bhakti. The Lord spoke thus. Right, so we're appreciating this knowledge when we make the point we're not this body, we're the soul. And so as the soul, then we are naturally, you know, part and parcel of the Lord, and therefore we're servant of the Lord. So through that understanding, that knowledge, that's the Brahman understanding, that we're Brahman. We're transcendental. The Lord is transcendental. He's controlling the material energy. We are then his servants. So through that knowledge, then we're coming to appreciate the position of Bhagavan. You know, because therefore he's God. You know, that's why we're serving. But at the same time, is then he's a person. And so then we appreciate the pastimes of that. So therefore we're hearing the tattva. So, and that, but at the same time, we're also hearing all the other aspects. So we're hearing the glory of his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, but we're also seeing his pastimes and how his name, form, and qualities are being manifest in his association with the devotees, right? So it's a natural thing. So that's the thing for the devotee who is being introduced to the concept of pure devotional service. This approaching the Lord through Brahman is just a preliminary step. It's a basic step. It's kind of like what new bhaktas tell, you know, are always discussing what they tell people that they come in contact with. You know, we're not the body, we're the soul. It's one of the first points in preaching. So through that understanding, then it makes it easier to appreciate the platform of the Lord. So that's the whole point, is we can say, oh, that's so simple. But that's the point. Brahman realization is that simple. You know, it's made into something big and all that. You know, it's just like you were saying the other day. You ever seen them? Sometimes you see these kind of like in India, maybe other places, but in India you have these circus street performers, where they set up a little dinky circus, you know, in the street there, and all the people gather around and they do things. But now, because they don't have as much big paraphernalia in that, they dramatize whatever they're going to do. Like, let's say they're going to do a cartwheel. You know, they'll do this whole thing about this, that, you know, and the faces and all this, and then they'll do it. And, you know, so it makes it more, especially, you know, for the kids and all that, then it's fine. But so that's what happens in the material world. Being liberated, Brahman realization is dramatized, and it's a big thing and this and that, and I'm God and all these kind of things like that. When, yeah, you're God, this much God. You know, Krishna's unlimited God. So these things become, you know, just like if you become rich, you become famous, and you become happy. It's. I don't think that there's ever been a what do you call it? any statistics that have shown that more money means more happiness, like that. So that's the difficulty. I kind of think when they did the one of the last tests, one of the happiest countries was Bangladesh or something like that. So Bengalis, they're eating their rice, their begun bhaji, they have the family and friends and Haribol, like that. So okay, Vriti. Next, the superiority of Bhagavan. That's why it says, what more can be said, right? Swatmanam means the jiva, jnanam, and vijnanam are knowledge related to Brahman. So you understand the jiva, how he is part and parcel of the Lord. Therefore, he's in relationship to Brahman. Krishna is the supreme Brahman. We're a part of that Brahman, and so therefore, what more is to be said? Next, the superiority of Bhagavan is specified by the special bliss which is absent in Brahman aspect, even though Brahman has unusual greatness, right? Because Brahman means great, right? But here is that the because what we did in the beginning is establish the Lord as transcendental, right? And then also his place, his devotees, therefore his pastimes, whatever he doing is transcendental. Right, so that's the first thing, because otherwise they're trying to say is all that's mundane. Then once he gets transcendental, now we see he's going through step by step and proving how Bhagavan is superior to Brahman. So first is that to get to Bhagavan, you go through that. So that means it's left. It's not the ultimate goal, right? So it's just like saying, but if you say no, but without Brahman, you can't get to Bhagavan. It's just like saying without going through the door, you can't get in the kitchen. So the door is superior to the kitchen. The door is superior to the whole cooking process and everyone eating and everything. So the door is supreme. It's kind of like, what are you talking about? It's a door, So that point of, because why, what would be the underlying thing? We're servants. But we don't want to accept that position. So we're trying to say we're as good as God. So in that way, the door, which is a servant of the kitchen, then we're trying to make it into something that it's not. We're trying to elevate it to a position that it doesn't deserve. So that's the position. So that's the whole point. Now he's going to show that the bliss in Bhagavan realization is greater than in Brahman. Anucheda 92. Dhruva, though a boy, when touched by the Lord's conch, which was Shabda Brahman, was able to recite proper prayers. He describes the Lord in the same way. He speaks of the Lord's completeness from showing his special amazing bliss. Quote, the bliss for your servant available from meditating on your lotus feet or from hearing about your pastimes from the devotees is not available in your form of greatness known as Brahman. What to speak of happiness for those who fall from the pleasures of Swarga, right? So in other words, what's going on here? When you fall from Swarga, you come here, right? Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.10, Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The transcendental bliss derived from devotional service, primarily from Shravanam Kirtanam, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23, hearing and chanting, cannot be compared to the happiness derived by karmis, by elevating themselves to the heavenly planets, or by jnanis or yogis who enjoy oneness with the supreme impersonal Brahman. Yogis generally meditate upon the transcendental form of Vishnu, but devotees not only meditate upon him, but actually engage in the direct service of the Lord. In the previous verse, we find the phrase bhavapyaya, which refers to birth and death. The Lord can give relief from the chain of birth and death. It is a misunderstanding to think, as do the monists, that when one gets relief from the process of birth and death, he merges into the supreme Brahman. Here it is clearly said that the transcendental bliss derived from Shravanam Kirtanam by pure devotees cannot be compared to Brahmananda or the impersonal conception of transcendental bliss derived by merging into the absolute, Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.9.10 purport. Right, so Dhruva Maharaj has gone through this. He was, his whole purpose was karma, to get a kingdom bigger than his father, grandfather's, right? Because his father has a kingdom, but he wants one bigger than his grandfather's. He's going to show them who's boss here, right? In other words, that's why Mano says, don't mess with a Kshatriya, even if they're a child, because they will get you. They just have to grow up, that's all. So here we see is that he wants that, so he's coming in from karma. Then, by following the instructions of Narad Muni and meditating on the Lord, then he's in this way doing karma yoga. So then when he does come in contact with the Lord, then the Lord appears, then by the Lord touching him with his concho, which is Shabda Brahman, right? Then going through that stage, then he gets to the stage of Bhagavan realization. And so now he's making the point that there's no comparison, right? We've seen previously, though, there was being given in other contexts about why would the, if it was the same, if just being absorbed in Brahman and then seeing the Lord as Lord Brahman and all that, if there's no difference, why would the Kumaras then become devotees? Why would they see the superiority? That bliss is not present in Brahman, even though it has unusual greatness. Sva mahi mani. Antakashi means time. Dhruva spoke thus to the Lord. Right? So it's very great, and so there's going to be some feeling there, of course, but it doesn't compare to the bliss that's there. That Atmarama thing is just, it's nice. You're satisfied. Vritti. Next, through the teachings of Lord Kapiladeva, it is stated that bhakti, the inclination to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any selfish motives, is in a transcendental position far better than mukti or liberation. Therefore, bhakti is the stage after liberation. Anucheda 93. Kapila teaches the superiority of the Lord over merging in Brahman, considered the greatest siddhi, by showing the superiority of his worship. Quote, bhakti to the Supreme Lord without material desires, composed of actions of the senses to reveal sense objects related to the Lord, which conforms to Guru's instructions, with mind dedicated exclusively to the Lord, and which includes actions on the spontaneous level, is superior to liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25, 32. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Kapiladeva said that when the senses, without desire for material profit or other selfish motives, are engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in devotional service. Right? Because you may perform, engage the senses, even without material motives or like that, but not for the purpose of pleasing the Lord, other than you have to please him because he's the boss, but you're trying to get karma or jnana, it's not called bhakti. But still the process of bhakti has to be used because it's the Lord who sanctions all these things. So here's when it's done and it's favorable, by the actions of the spiritual master and all that, then that's when it becomes, then it becomes bhakti. The spirit of service is far better than siddhi. Gotcha. Salvation. Yes.
Maharaj, I want to ask you a question that for sadhakas, sometimes we practice very elevated angas of devotional service given by the previous acharyas. The difficulty seems to be is that we don't have the realization of that level. So it's bewildering and people practice for a while, but not realizing what do they practice. Then they just leave and go elsewhere, as you mentioned yesterday. So how can we achieve the same level of realization that we practice, because our practice is basically Bhagavat Mark and with Pancharatra as a support for that.
Yes. The point is self-realization means know the level you're at. So if you're dealing from Shraddha to Prema, where are you? That's the thing, is that yes, our ultimate goal is to come to Prema for Radha and Krishna, you know, in Braja Bhakti. But the point is that where are we now? You know? So that's the whole thing, is that, you know, it's just like, let's say you practice getting on the bus, you know, so you come over to the thing, stand there, you know, on the curb, then you put your, you know, your foot up, you reach your hand up to grab the railing thing like this and all that. And you practice that, you know, 1,000 times a day, you know, like that. Great. So when a bus is there, it'll be not easy to get into. But you have to remember, just because you're practicing, that doesn't mean you're getting on the bus. You know, so you have to know where you are. So if you're practicing that 2 blocks away from the bus station and then wondering why I'm not getting on the bus, it's kind of like, you know, because you don't know where you are. So you have to, when you're standing in front of the bus, that's when you get on the bus. Because the point is when the opportunity is there, take it. You're absorbed in the kirtan. It's going very nicely. Don't decide to go home to do some email. You know, be absorbed in the kirtan. Take it. It's there. Go for it. You can do the email later. You know? So the point is that we have to be very, very careful that this whole process is there, but you have to know what you're doing. Or let's say you're in third grade and you come across, you know, your elder brother's, you know, high school math. And so you sit down and look at it, and now you're the big scholar and all that, but you can't figure out what's going on. Then you say, oh, this is useless. You know, so then the whole process is useless. And so then you give up doing your homework and go to the kitchen and look for something to eat. You know, so the point is no, you're on third grade, do third grade stuff, but know what the goal is. See, that's the thing, is that it's been noted that those who are really successful in the whole school system and, you know, getting through, you know, the school system, through college, getting their degrees, getting their job, It's generally by those individuals who from a young age know what they're going to do, where they're going. Like if the child at, you know, 8, 10, 12 decides, I'm going to be a doctor. And so to be a doctor, I need good grades. And so then they focus and they study and all that because they know what they're doing. Well, all the other kids are just going there because they're supposed to. And this year we're studying this, but who cares? So the whole point is we know where we're going, but you also have to be intelligent and know exactly where you are. So the hearing chanting process is going on. It doesn't change. That's the whole thing, is that there's this idea that more advanced means I'm doing something else. Because the Anga of Bhakti that's the best is hearing and chanting. There isn't something else better. All of them will get you to back to Godhead. But it's considered the best because it will start anything else and all others depend on it also, you know. So this idea that there's something else, but the point is that, okay, we're hearing and chanting. So the point is when you hear the name, so then what happens? Is it just a sound vibration? Does it mean anything to you or this or that? So if it's just a sound vibration, focus on the sound vibration, then it's name. When by hearing the name you think of Krishna's form, then you're on that platform. And then when you think, then if you're on the thing, when you hear the name, you think of Krishna's qualities, form and qualities, then you're on that platform. And if you naturally remember the pastimes, then it's on there. You know, it's just like if I say, you know, like let's say the name of your son, is it just a sound vibration? No, you immediately think of him, his form, his qualities, you know, what he's doing right now, you know, rummaging around in the kitchen looking for some leftovers from yesterday. You know, this is all that goes, that comes to mind when you say the name. You know, so that's the whole point, is that that's how you tell where you are. But the process of hearing and chanting doesn't change. That's the glory of it, that you're a neophyte, you're doing the same activity that someone who's an Uttamadikari on the platform of Prema does, just that they're more absorbed in it, that what result they get is greater. But it's still the same thing. So these side things, these are details. They're not actually the main point. They just naturally come up. You know, does that make sense? So sometimes it's thought that, you know, because it mentioned here, he mentioned that about that, and which includes actions on the spontaneous level. This is Kapila Muni. This is Shankya, right? And so then, because that just means it's natural, that coming from the heart. And so then, but that doesn't mean that it's a different activity. That's the whole idea, is that the activity that's you should be doing, you do that. And if other activities come naturally along with it that are authorized by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then they become added in. But it's not that there's a separate path. Sometimes it's thought that path of spontaneous devotional service is a separate path in the way of external activities. But that's the whole point. That's a vision from the mentality of Vaidhi. Vaidhi thinks it's something different. It means if I'm on Vaidhi, I've heard about spontaneous devotional service, you know, and I want spontaneous devotional service at the same time as I have a little bit of, I'm comfortable with myself, you know, that I'm a great guy. And so therefore I want to know how to do that. And I want something separate. And the person will tell me that it's something separate and all that. I'll tell you, the person who says, no, it's exactly the same thing. Just you want to do it. Who wants to hear that? Literally. No one wants to hear that. They want to hear is, oh no, but then you go into your room, you lock the door and close all the curtains. And then in a very hushed voice, you do this and you do that. And so many things like that. Then we'll go, okay, bingo. Now we got something solid. But the point is spontaneous just means you like to do it. You know? So that's the whole point, is that it's not a separate path. So these angas, they will come naturally. They'll come naturally. They come on their own. So you know they're there. As they come up in the regular performance of duties, then one is engaged in them. But to try to, you know, exclusively put together some kind of padati like this and that, it won't be very important, because like you said, people will become frustrated, and then they'll look for something else to do. There's a good chance they'll either, you know, try some other sampradaya, they'll try go back into karma and yawn. Like that, you know, I've seen somebody sit there and read Vedic literatures, you know, 10 hours a day and this and that and all that, but no one's giving them any credit for it, right? Because, and they want to be recognized for how much they know and revered for that. And no one's doing that. You know, it's, if you can use it in Krishna's service, that's great. So then the person, you know, decided that, you know, because they studied so much Shastra and all that, then they also knew astrology and everything, you know. So then they decided that they want to go back to their country. They're going to go to university, get a degree as a PhD. You know, then, of course, they're recognized. So they decided that the best, most auspicious time that they could leave for accomplishing their goal was on Gaur Purnima Day from Mayapur. So yeah, great. You want to go back to the material world? Hey, go for it. So that's the thing. So the point was, is his goal wasn't knowledge of Krishna. His goal was recognition for his scholarship. And so then that has to be the thing, is that that defines what it is. But otherwise, then, does this make any sense? Or are we just babbling on here?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. It does.
Yeah. So the whole point is that these things are there. You catch it or you don't catch it. But catch it means it works. But you've heard about it, and so by gyan, you're trying to do it. But vigyan, it's just like for the young girl, you have to explain to her about, you know, you're a girl and that, and there's boys, and then, you know, that boys are there, then, you know, he looks at you, you look at her, this and that. And you have to go through this whole thing, and then she sits there and practices it. No, it's just there's that moment. It just happens. That's spontaneous. That's the meaning of it. It's no different than what's discussed. It just comes naturally. You know? Like I said, like the brahmachari and a bucket of halava. It's spontaneous. You don't have to explain to them. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that, but they, because of our conditioned nature, you either follow the religion that's given to us or we'll make up our own. So the Sahajiyas have made up their own. And so they have their own path and all that. And then others may be influenced by that kind of concept because the razor's edge is right on the path. And otherwise, if you go off, whether you've heard from sahajis or when it makes up one's own path, then that's the problem. So that's the difficulty, is that having heard these things, then there are those who are afraid of it because, you know, sahajis do that stuff, but they do that stuff wrong. You know, like someone deals with a knife and they cut themselves, therefore no one will deal with knives. No, why don't you learn to deal properly? So therefore, the topics of Abhideya and Prayojana generally aren't studied very much. That's why then Vaishnav Seva and Namaruchi aren't necessarily so well appreciated. So people may have those, but it's not recognized, and so it may not be cultivated as dynamically as it could be. You know? And on tattva, it's just the basic. You know, it's kind of like, oh, we chant, we just keep to the basic. Oh, don't make it complicated. Don't be fanatic. But then when it comes to, let's say, managerial systems, then we make it as complicated as we can. You know, you have a temple president and you have like three or four people above him. When Prabhupada basically pointed out in management, no one's above him. It means literally no one's above the president. He's the highest as far as managers go. But he has authorities because the point is you have to manage for Krishna. So the GBC is there to see that you're managing for Krishna. But as far as management goes, he's the terminal position. That's the end. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that we create these complicated things. But actually, you know your position, do that, and it works. If you don't know your position, then you have to have a very complicated system to find what you can do, because you can't do it anyway. So you just talk about it. And because everyone talks about it, you think you're busy. But the point is that you talk about Krishna, you talk about these things, you engage yourself, so hearing and chanting. Then what we're doing is no different than what they do in the spiritual world. Mother Jashoda, she gets up in the morning. She goes and wakes up Krishna. Right after that, then she bathes Krishna. Then after that, she cooks and she feeds Krishna. Right? And then after that, then she sets him up, you know, like that, and then he spends his day. Does that sound any different than what we're doing?
No.
No. No. So that's the whole thing, is that the Pancharatrik system simply formalizes the Bhagavat system, because we wouldn't have a clue what to do next. Because spontaneous means it comes from the heart. Whimsical just means it's just, I feel like it. Because it has to be coming from Krishna, not from us. He's the Vishaya, right? He's the enjoyer of it. He's the one with all the wonderful qualities. And then seeing those qualities, he becomes the Udipana. Then the Anubhavas, we want to do something. Like that. So since we don't have that, then we just follow what the acharyas say. They say get up in the morning. Otherwise, we'd be getting up at 9 o'clock. No?
Thank you, Maharaj.
I mean, for the karmis, they only get up earlier than 9 because they have to be at work. But if they didn't have to be at work, no one would get up before 9 o'clock. Yeah. Okay. Is that okay?
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Kapiladev said that when the senses, without desire for material profit or other selfish motives, are engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in devotional service. That spirit of service is far better than siddhi, salvation. Bhakti, the inclination to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is in a transcendental position far better than mukti or liberation. Thus, bhakti is the stage after liberation, right? Because that was the point being made in the Sandarbha, is that you come to the Brahman and bhakti is beyond that. Unless one is liberated, one cannot engage the senses in the service of the Lord. That's why all devotees are liberated. But whether they choose to work on that platform or not, that's the choice they always have. That's the choice as a jiva. You are Brahman. Now, do you want to act as Brahman, or do you want to act as dead material energy? that's that's our choice. We can either act as Brahman and follow the spiritual potency, or act as unconscious matter. Either way, we can do. But the point is when you understand the position of Brahman, that's when it works. That's why it says sadhana bhaktas are functioning, minimal, at the point of vijnana moya. That they understand they're not the body, they're the soul, and so they're doing the sadhana from that platform. Then they, then they take up that devotion to Krishna, so then it takes on that quality. And so then they function at anandamaya. But their situation is vijnanamaya.
Maharaj, so can we say that because we know from the Bhagavatam, Brahma meditated for 1,000 years, and then first he came to realization of karma. Then another 1,000 years, jnana. Then another 1,000 years is bhakti. So it took him a while, but we are suddenly loaded by Srila Prabhupada's mercy with, practice of Shuddha bhakti. And then can we say that those who leave after a while, they're just not ready. It's not their level of realization, to practice that kind of thing. They have to go through the process a little more and then come to that level, more mature.
On one level, you could say, but the point is the soul always has the choice. So, because otherwise then you can say, oh, I'm not ready yet, so I'm going to go out and just enjoy myself and that until I become ready. But you become ready by engaging in service. So when we say that someone, that the agyata sukriti, it matures to the point where you get shraddha, means technically you've already done all that before. You've already practiced all the aspects of karma and jnana and yoga, and then you've seen that, no, this is not getting us. So bhakti already includes the benefits we want from karma, jnana, and yoga. And so then taking that up. But as Prabhupada says, sometimes the soul gets tired. He decides he wants a little break. And so, Maya is ready to accommodate. She has all kinds of, special vacation spots. One of the main ones is she's got a hotel in California, like that, and up, and you can check that one out, but the point is like you says, you can't leave, so how do you leave? Only by taking up devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole point is that you have to be determined that that's what you want, and you surrender to Krishna and he'll make it happen, because we're not going to liberate ourselves. That's another thing, is that it's a descending process. The mercy descends. There is, you go through those stages, but it's just like, let us say you're in a well, right? And then someone, and you're calling for help. Then someone at the top of the well, outside, they throw you a rope. So when they start pulling you up, then let's say it's 10 meters deep, okay? So when they start pulling the rope and you're holding on, then you're at the zero. Then after a moment you're at the 1 meter level, then the 2 meter level, then the 3 meter. So it's not because you caught the rope and they threw it, now suddenly you're at the 9 meter level and it's just a matter of, just reaching your hand up and like that. No, it goes up through those stages. And it's not that you're making yourself go up. No, you're holding on. That's your part. But you're not making yourself go up. So that's the thing, is I'm doing all this. Why it's not happening? Because we think I'm doing this. No, we're not. We're simply acting to please Krishna, right? Without desire for material profit or other selfish motives. That's the whole point. And then Krishna pulls us up. So that's the whole thing. It says this idea, because we're so used to karma, I do something, the material energy transforms, and therefore it's mine. But the point is here is that, no, it's that you do something, when Krishna's pleased, then that realization, spiritual realization comes. So that's the specialness that's there. And so as long as we look at it, it's just not working and all this, the point is, but are we the doer? So then instead of giving up, then surrender to Krishna. So that surrender to Krishna, that's the dynamic aspect. But we see is when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining the whole process of the six principles of surrender, then even though the first point is give up rejecting those things that are unfavorable and accepting those that are favorable, he starts with seeing yourself as a servant of the Lord and being meek and humble. So you start there. You start with that platform of spiritual. Then you apply the process following yama niyama. And then you see Krishna is my maintainer and protector, and I'm not. So I give up those things that are unfavorable. I accept what is favorable. I see Krishna as the maintainer and Krishna as the protector rather than I am. Then we see ourselves as servant of Krishna and we're always meek and humble. But now when you come to that fifth and sixth platform, then it'll be on the Uttama platform where you'll have that kind of realization. And so then all these things will be going together. But unless you have that identity as servant of Krishna and that you're meek and humble and that is Krishna who's doing everything and he's important, then the first two stages don't really work very well. Because you see is that they may have trouble giving up what's not favorable and accepting what is. They'll make up their own stuff. So that's what we were saying before, when they're a little proud of their position and their status and they think that they're a little bit better, then they can get distracted by this. Like that. Because otherwise you see others and they deal with these things and they just get involved in all those. They get involved nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a matter of, because we also see is that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the songs and he's talking about the position of this I am the protector and Krishna's the protector and maintainer, then in each section, each of these six levels, he has, some songs, five, six, four, five, six songs. And you see the last one, the beginning one is how, I'm protecting, but it's actually Krishna. I can't control, about the material energy. I just surrender to Krishna. But at the end, he sees that Krishna, he's arranged for my facility and my service and everything like this. And he's taking care. So all these six, they have a progression. But at the same time as all six are going on, because Mother Jashoda sees what's favorable to please Krishna at this point. And what's not favorable, she gives up. So she doesn't have a plan other than pleasing Krishna. And so what happens now, then that's what she arranges. Right? She sees now Krishna's tired, then she takes care of that. She's hungry, takes care of that. Does that make sense? So they're seeing what's favorable or not favorable, but it's natural based on the love. They had that surrender to Krishna, that Krishna's taking care. And then they're always identifying as servant of Krishna, and they're always have that meek and humble. So all those things function together. These are naturally qualities of someone on that Uttama platform. Right? That all six are nicely developed. Right? But those last two, then they also have to be there to some degree to start the process. So that's why we say devotees are liberated because they're engaging their senses in the Lord's service. But if they decide not to engage their senses in the Lord's service, at that moment, they're not liberated. But we take it, it's all or nothing. No, it's when you are, and when you're not, you're not. It's like the light. If I turn the switch, here it's the other way, isn't it? You push the switch, goes down, it goes on, right? In America, you switch it up like that. Okay, so you turn it on, it's on. But if you turn it off, it's off. It's not, no, it's either on or off. It's always like that. Once it switches out, it's there, no, it's whichever you do. The point is this, Uttamas are not interested in it being off. They're just not gonna do it. Right? Everybody has senses. Everybody can use them for themselves, but they never will. There's no interest in that. Does that make sense? You know, like everybody could drop a brick on their toe. Yeah, they and you have free will to do it at any moment, but you don't. You know, so that principle is that you start with that. So that's why even the neophyte is on the liberated platform. It's just sometimes they function on it, sometimes they don't. The Madhyama is generally steady on functioning on that platform. And the Uttama is situated there, you know, continuously. But so that position is where you start from. Then you see what's favorable, not favorable. So you're giving up sinful activities and are taking up the devotional. But let's say, you know, let's say someone was a smarta and they take up, you know, like that, then it's going to be different. It's just they're going to, the activities that they do in the day, how they dress, how they eat won't change. But now it's favorable because it's offered to Krishna. And it's unfavorable because it wasn't offered to Krishna. You know, so coming from backgrounds where the lifestyle we lived and then the lifestyle of the Vedic culture is so different, therefore we have the tendency to think that, okay, so bhakti is this completely separate kind of program. So that means spontaneous devotional service must also be a separate kind of program. But no, it's just in the more advanced level of the same thing. Right? So it's like math. It works on numbers. So it doesn't matter how great the technique you're using, it's still just numbers. You know, so that's the thing, is that it has to be understood that numbers are still there. It's not Mother Yashoda, when she cooks, there's some other technique that she knows that nobody in the material world knows. It's all the same techniques. It's just her, the devotion she has, and because of that, then the perfection in her, how she balances everything, you know, the subtlety that she uses, then is so perfect. But otherwise, cooking techniques, they don't change. That they come from the spiritual world, not from here. Do rocks cook? No. So that means it has to come from somewhere other than here, because rocks don't cook. You know, water doesn't cook. Fire doesn't cook, right? It just sits there and burns things up, right? It's not that, you know, all these, you know, fires that are happening on the west coast of America, that when the firemen go out there, they're always so surprised, because there's all these, the bigger the fire, the more pots there are of all these far out preparations that are cooking. They can't figure out what's going on. And they're so busy eating all these preps and rolling on the ground in ecstasy that they forget to put out the fire, you know. Right? No, air is not cooking. Ether is not cooking. So where does cooking come from? It comes from the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Yeah, so all these things come from the spiritual world. They don't come from here. You know, somebody may, it may be revealed to them how to do a certain thing, like in France, and they have names for all the different techniques that they use. But the point is, they're just putting names to things that are already there. You know, maybe they didn't know about it. You know, you catch yourself, whatever you catch, you say a wild boar and stick it on a spit and turn the spit over a fire. And, you know, that's it, hot cuisine, you know, or something. Then with time, then they figure out they can do something else, you know. So, but those techniques are already there. In India, they've been using them forever. And why? Because they come from the spiritual world. But these are all just the situational things, you know, and the transformation. Then there's the activity you perform to get the transformation. Then there's doing it to please Krishna. Right? So the jnana and kriya are just there to support serving Krishna. But so our choice is, we've made, we want to use these things for ourselves. You know, it's just like, let's say you get something. You know, let's say, the parent gets a nice gift or something, or goes out and buys something, you know, very, very specific for a very, you know, particular kind of work, you know, and it's generally speaking, not something that is indestructible, right? But now let's say the 1, 2-year-old, 3-year-old gets a hold of it. They have a whole nother idea what it's for, you know? you know, that iPhone that you have, that's suddenly, you know, the table that Barbie and Ken are sitting at and having tea, you know, or it's a flying carpet, you know, that, you know, one of the trolls is flying on or something. You know, so it just becomes anything that they want, you know. So that's the point, is that we take the things that have particular purposes and just use it how we want. And then with time, the modes of nature show us how to use it properly. And then because, you know, it was revealed to us, then we think it's ours. And therefore, then, you know, we give it the name and all this kind of stuff like that. But it's stuff that's always been there. Does that make sense? So we have to understand material energy is unconscious. So it doesn't care. Why should it transform? Why should the rock, you know, transform? You know, because, you know, the kids come along and pick him up and skip him across the lake, and then he ends up at the bottom of the lake or ends up on the other side of the lake, and he actually prefers this side of the lake. So now what can he do? Now that means he has to move to a location where the kids can't get him. That requires that he either, you know, some way he can crawl, walk, you know, or fly like that. And so therefore, then the rock grows feet and then, you know, hobbles off and then, you know, to some inaccessible corner where the kids can't get at him. And then he can sit there peacefully. You know, why does the rock care? It just doesn't, it really doesn't care. You know, does that make sense? You know, why would the lightning bolt hitting the primordial soup and then, you know, by their theory now creating the first, you know, whatever it is, protozoa or whatever it is there, you know, the one-celled entity. Why should it think I should divide? Why should it think I need to eat? Because it's made out of matter, by matter. Why would it think different? Where does it come from? Where does this thinking, feeling, and willing come from? So it comes from the living entity. That comes from Krishna. So everything's coming from the spiritual platform. Just this is the place where we can use that spiritual platform for ourselves. That's all. So we have to be very clear that it comes from there. So we use it like they do there. But the point is that's the technique. But the actual most important thing is the attitude. If the attitude is used properly, you made it to the top of the pile now. You know, on the screen, you're moving up, right? You know. Okay. Okay. So they say, yeah. So yeah. Basically, now we could shake hands, no? Couldn't we? Yeah. Yeah, okay. See. Yeah. So. What were you saying before we got distracted by that stupidity? Yeah.
That the meta doesn't engage itself.
Yes. So the thing is it's the attitude that makes it pure bhakti. That's what makes it Braja Bhakti. They have an attitude that they use, you know? So in the spiritual world, there's all the attitude of service to Krishna and pleasing Krishna. So that is consistent. There's only one philosophy in the spiritual world. But due to taste, then there's different ways to apply that service, you know, whether it's in majesty or sweetness or combinations, and the particular form of the Lord, all these things. So that's why then if the devotee, even though technically he does not know all the technique, but he's trying to do it to please Krishna, it will work out. Krishna will accept it. And then Krishna will give the intelligence how he can improve the quality of his work, because that's what they, in the spiritual world, they're trying to do the best. And best means is by the technique that Krishna has given. And how is it revealed? It's revealed to the devotees. But otherwise, cooking comes from Krishna. But then we see cooking in Mother Jashoda, Rohini, and Radharani. You know? But otherwise, it comes from Krishna. Because they're his energy, so that means he's the cook. But they're manifesting it, and then they're known as the greatest cooks, not him. Because he is existence, you know. Okay, he's the greatest cook, so what? It's the point is it's the interaction between devotees and the Lord based on that cooking that becomes special. So that's why someone can not have any skills and all. So this whole thing about, no, we have to become professionals and better skills, that's nice if we're trying to improve our skills for Krishna. But if we think that improving your skills will improve bhakti on its own, that's illusion. That's foolishness. While you can have it at the same time as the opposite. You have so many of these followers, like we were seeing with those ritualistic Brahmins that were associated with Ramananda Rai. They know perfectly how to do everything, you know, exactly according to the letter of the law. But at the same time, they don't have the attitude. So that's the whole point, is that of the two, the attitude of service to Krishna is the most important. That surrender to Krishna, that's the most important. So that's the thing to appreciate, is that if that's there, everything else works. So how you see how Srila Prabhupada just introduced that attitude. Devotees, you know, you see those early devotees and, you know, how they dressed, how they did everything. They didn't know. But they're hearing from Srila Prabhupada, they're doing kirtan, they're taking prasad, you know, the prophet cooked himself, you know. They didn't even help in the beginning, right? Because they didn't know. I mean, they had never cooked at their house and all that. So, you know, if breakfast you have to do yourself means you take open the top of the box of cereal, pour it into the bowl and pour some milk on top, you know, like that, you know, that's serious technique, right, you know. You know, and then you sit there and read the box while you're eating, you know, like that. So the point is they didn't know, but they were advancing in the mentality. And you see any of these early, you know, articles, like where the Karmis, you know, the journalists and that have written articles that appeared in magazines and newspapers and that. They just talk directly about Krishna, serving Krishna, and that attitude and how it gives the best result and all these different things. They don't know so much technique. And with time, then technique is introduced. Especially we see that when Srila Prabhupada established Los Angeles, then he introduced the deity worship, all the technique, all the things to go with it, all the tech, you know, all so many of these technical points. And he spent a lot of time there with the idea that from there it would just go out around the world, not that he has to go to each place and teach them. Right? Everyone will just do what they're doing there. And so then it works really nicely. So these things, that can be, if the attitude is right, then you can give technique. If you're just giving technique and no attitude, then what's the advantage of establishing just, you know, someone who knows all the rituals? You know? Because since when are they, that the yogic Brahmins aren't the ones that surrender to Krishna, it's their wives. Right? But it's not that we don't have great people who know all these things that don't surrender to Krishna. We have examples of that also. But the point is it's that surrender that's important. That's what's the real thing. So that's why you start there, and then the things come up, and then, you know, the book distribution comes up, and then the temples, and then the Sankirtan, all these different things. Everything just starts to expand. But the point is you can't lose sight of the point is, no, it's that the attitude of that surrender to Krishna. That's the real thing. That's the important thing. And so if that sight is lost, then, you know, people want to be more sophisticated because socially it makes them feel better. You know, it's really tough to be, you know, 60, 70 years old and you're not very sophisticated. You know, and so then, okay, let's become sophisticated. But the point is that's not what's there. So the things, oh, devotees are so rough, this and that. But who were they before they joined? There was some, you know, super refined person and they joined the movement and became rough? No, they were rough. A few people were not rough. Satsarupa was gentle. He you know, like that. Bhavananda Prabhu, he was refined. You know, a few, they were refined when they came. But everybody else is like kind of, you go out with a, you know, one of those paint scrapers, you know, the big white thing, and scrape them off of the sidewalk over there, you know. And best is you go to the sidewalk and it drops down, you know, there's the gate and there's the street, that part there, that's where you scrape. You know, and if you got the time, you can open that little grill there where all the water goes down and reach down there and then grab everybody else. So that's the whole point, is they weren't refined. So that they were rough with each other is because that's how they were. You know? So the whole thing of, you know, complaining about them and it's Christian conscience. No, it was them. Right? You know, Bhakti Trumaj, he joined in India. Here's, you know, they were really strong on this, you know, not no ladies around and, you know, all the women in the back of the bus and all that kind of stuff. Did he ever behave like that? Never, because he was a gentleman. He came from Calcutta, high class, aristocratic background. Subhagmar is the same. And it's not that, okay, well, they're simple guys. He went to school in Germany, did his university in Germany. Subhagmar did his degree in law in England. He was a barrister. But they never dealt badly. Never. There isn't an occasion. Nothing. So then devotees behave badly. That's because that's how they, that's their you know, conditioned nature. And so this idea is that, oh, you know, so many mistakes, so many, that's because of us, not because of the process. So you don't have to change the process. You don't have to change. Oh, that didn't work. We tried Varnashram, it didn't work. It's kind of like, on what day of the week you tried Varnashram? You know, when did you try Varnashram? Explain it to me, please. You know? No, you try Varnashram to see how you can control and enjoy. And since Varnashram restricts how you can control and enjoy, it didn't work. So therefore we gave it up and we take corporate because that you can control and enjoy with. So that's the difficulty, is that we have to know who we are and what level we're at and all that, and therefore then apply yourself to the process. Then you'll see you'll move very quickly. Like if I know I'm 2 blocks from the bus station, I'll keep walking until I get to the bus station. You know, I know in my mind the technique is when I get there, then the door opens, and then you put 1 foot up onto that first step of the bus, grab that little railing thing, you know, and pull yourself up and take the next step, and then go inside and sit down. But if I'm doing that on the street and that, people are going to go, what's this guy doing? You know, there's a good chance he's not going to get a, what do you call it? A Nobel Prize for it, like in Beautiful Mind. Not just think this guy's crazy. You know, why is he going as if he's getting on a bus and he's right here on the sidewalk? You know, there's no bus around here. They'll think he's crazy. So you know what it is, but you use it when you get there. You know, because the point is just remembering, it doesn't matter what it is. That's one of the tools, the Astakalaliya is one of the tools to remember Krishna. So that all the pastimes fit in and you can move from one to the other. But you can remember anything. Anything can remind you. The gopis, when they see a tamal tree, they think of Krishna. They don't think, okay, well, how does that fit into the Astakalaliya here? You know? You know, no, it just reminds them of Krishna. That's all. So it's something you can use. But the point is if it doesn't remind you of Krishna, then what's the point of using it? So that's the whole point. You just, it has its natural place. Does that work?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay. Thus, bhakti is the stage after liberation. Unless one is liberated, one cannot engage the senses in the service of the Lord. So that establishes that the new bhaktis are also liberated. When the senses are engaged either in material activities of sense gratification or in the activities of the Vedic injunctions, there is some motive. But when the same senses are engaged in the service of the Lord and there is no motive, that is called animita and is the natural inclination of the mind. The conclusion is that when the mind, without being deviated either by Vedic injunctions or by material activities, is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness or devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is far better than the most aspired for liberation. It's far better than the most aspired for liberation from material entanglement. You think it's far better than the most aspired for, than the dash, liberation of material engagement. Srimad Bhagavatam 325.32 purport. Yeah. So when it says that our Vedic injunctions, that means the benefits you can get from the injunctions. That's why, you know, when Krishna in the Gita is saying about that one gives up, you know, what he has heard, what he will hear, and you won't worry about that. That means that you've heard that by doing this, you get this, you know, the benefit of Manashramedha, you do that, you know, you get, you know, how you say, plenty of food, you do this, you get this, or by doing this, you become liberated. Those things you don't care about. So that's why you're not deviated by Vedic injunctions. That doesn't mean you don't use Vedic injunctions, because they're much more useful, right? Like that. But it's just, it means you're not looking for the benefits of karma and jnana. Siddhehe means compared to liberation. Bhagavan Nama Kaumudi, or Bhagavat Nama Kaumudi, says that siddhi means liberation by jnana. Kapila spoke thus. Vritti. Next, it is described that according to the qualifications of worshippers, the absolute truth is perceived in various forms, of which Bhagavan, the complete tattva, is perceived only by the devotees of the Lord who are specially qualified. Anucheda 94. So only devotees can actually understand the form of Bhagavan. Others, they even though they may be transcendentalists, they can't really understand the form. They just understand his eternal existence. Anucheda 94. Bhagavan is the complete tattva. The incomplete manifestation with appearance of a general form manifesting because of lacking qualification of the special sadhaka is called Brahman. That is expressed directly in two verses. So when we appreciate the position of the absolute, but because there's we lack our qualification, then we appreciate, you know, Krishna's greatness and how he pervades everything and that, but we know it's coming from the person. You know, that's the special thing. By the devotees, they have faith in Krishna as the person of devotional service, but they may be appreciating Krishna's greatness or his kindness or things like that. The goal of Gaya. Okay, this is expressed directly in two verses. The goal of jnana, fixed on my expansion as Brahman, beyond the gunas, and the goal of bhakti are actually only one goal, which is known by the word Bhagavan, right? Because that's the purpose you're trying to get to. One is more direct, one is less. Just as one object, the substrate of many qualities, is perceived by the various senses in various ways, so Bhagavan is perceived variously by the various scriptural practices. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:32, 3:33. So you have one object, and it has so many, substrata of qualities. So depending upon which senses are used, then you get different things. It appears in a different way. But so depending on what scriptural injunctions and all that, then you get different realizations. But the whole point is that it's all Bhagavan. The whole purpose of jnana is to know Bhagavan. The whole purpose of yoga is to know Bhagavan. There is no other goal. The commentary says, this verse explains that Bhagavan is attainable by jnana yoga, just as he is obtainable by bhakti yoga. There is one goal for jnana yoga, devoid of gunas, and for yoga characterized by bhakti fixed on me. Who is that? It is he who is understood by the word Bhagavan. Gita says, te Prapnu vanti mam eva sarva bhuta hite rataha. Those engaged in work for all beings attain me. Bhagavad Gita 12.4. The result of jnana yoga is realization of atma. That is understood by scriptures. That's what it said before. So the jnana, the actual knowledge, is you understand what's atma and the supreme atma. Right? So we start off with that. And we start off with that. That's there. You're not the body. And so sarvadharma pratyaja, surrender to Krishna. That's, you know, what we, someone's, you know, straight off that, that's what we're talking about. Right? Then from that, then one surrenders to the Lord. The result of bhakti yoga is attainment of the worshipable Lord. How can these two results be one? The question is answered by an example. Just as one object like milk, the shelter of many qualities like form and taste, is perceived in various ways by different senses with different capacities, such as the eye seeing white color, the tongue tasting milk's sweetness, and touch sensing milk's coolness. So Bhagavan, though one, is perceived in various forms. So there is only Bhagavan. That's the whole point, is that we have to be appreciate that there's only Bhagavan. Then he has these other aspects, because these are substratas. They're not something separate. So Bhagavan and Paramatma are not separate. They're just only understanding some aspects of Bhagavan. Bhagavan is here designated as the Angi, source of all Angas or parts, right? Bhakti yoga is compared to the mind, since it perceives all parts together. Milk's color, taste, coolness. Kapila spoke thus. Priti, having concluded through the realization of many great sages and the words of the Supreme Lord Kapiladeva, that Bhagavan is the complete manifestation of the Absolute, whereas Brahman is incomplete, right? Because it's incomplete without Bhagavan. Where would it be? What would be its basis? In the next Adhikarana, Brahman is established as an Amsa of Bhagavan. So now that you've showed the superior, now you can switch it how it's part of Bhagavan. Right? Because before we're looking at it, there's the Supreme Brahman, and then there's the material. And so you have to get to that. Then we're saying, no, there's the form beyond. No, but that's material. No, we're established. No, that form is real. That form is transcendental. Okay, this form is transcendental, but you know, the taste here is higher than the form there. No, actually the taste there is higher. In fact, you get to that realization by going through this, and then the taste there is higher. Now, what makes the difference is the difference of your realization on what you perceive. So the more complete, then you understand Bhagavan. So now there's going to be established that Brahman is an Anga of Bhagavan, not the other way around. Because generally we look at it backwards. So we're switching the perspective by which we look at things. Okay, so Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 2. Brahman is designated as an Amsa of Bhagavan. Anuchedas 95 to 98. Adhikarana Prakashika. Having established that the realization of Bhagavan is complete, whereas that of Brahman is incomplete, the current Adhikarana shows that realization of Brahman is not independent of Bhagavan realization, by proving the Brahman aspect is an inseparable part of Bhagavan. First, in the Anucheda 95, Brahman is stated as an Amsa Bhagavan by citing from the canto of Bhagavatam. And Lord Shri says, Mahetu, that the impersonal Brahman, known that the cause and manifester, known, I guess it's probably as the cause and manifester of the universe, and that the Shabda Brahman are his eternal forms. So this specifies that Brahman is the energy of the Supreme Lord. Next, the Anuchedas 96 and 97. Brahman is stated as the impersonal vibhuti of the Lord. This is described in the eighth canto where Lord Matsya says to King Satyavrata that he can understand Brahman aspect in the following way. By my mercy, you will realize my power known as the impersonal Brahman, which will be disclosed in your heart through questions and answers. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.24.38. Also in the Shrutis and Smritis, while describing the powers of the Lord, the vibhutis, Brahman is stated along with other elements. Hence, Brahman can be considered to be the Lord without manifestation of qualities. Brahman is also described in the scriptures as the radiance of the Lord because of not manifesting any qualities. Therefore, Brahman is called Brahma Jyoti. Jyoti refers to light or radiance. Hence, the realization of Brahman cannot be a separate realization because Brahman is an amsa or an impersonal aspect of Bhagavan. You know, it's just like Krishna is, he is killing, lifting Govardhan Hill with his strength. But if we just take the aspect of strength, that's the impersonal. But when we apply it, that he is the person is using it, that's in the Bhagavan form. Yeah. Anucheda 95. Brahman is designated as an amsa of Bhagavan. Aham vai sarva bhutani bhutatma bhuta bhavanaha. Shabda brahma param brahma. Mamo bhe shashvati tanu. I am all beings. I am the soul of all beings. I am the cause of all beings. The scripture and impersonal Brahman are my two eternal forms. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16:51. Uddhriti, Srila Prabhupada. Herein it is said, Aham vai sarva bhutani. The Lord is everything, sarva bhutani, including the living entities and the material or physical elements. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 7:4-5, earth, water, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, altogether these eight comprise my separated material energies. Besides this inferior energy, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mind, which consists of the living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. End quote. The living entities tries to lord it over the material or physical elements. But both the physical elements and the spiritual spark are energies emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord says, Aham vai sarva bhutani, I am everything. Just as heat and light emanate from fire, these two energies, the physical elements and the living entities, emanate from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the Lord says, Aham vai sarvani bhutani. I expand the physical and spiritual categories. Again, the Lord is the super soul, guides the living entities, or are conditioned by the physical atmosphere. Therefore, he is called bhutatma bhutabhavanaha. He gives the living entity the intelligence with which to improve his position so that he may return home back to Godhead. Or if he does not want to go back to Godhead, the Lord gives him the intelligence with which to improve his material position. So the point is, it's all coming from Krishna anyway. So the living entity is not doing it, but they want to claim that they're doing it. So like that, you know, from the previous point before, is then they want to claim that it's by my sadhana, that's why I'm elevating Krishna consciousness. No, it's that you're serving Krishna, and by Krishna's grace, you're advancing. This is confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Sarvasya chaham hridisani vishto matas mritir jnanam apohanam cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. From within, the Lord gives the living being the intelligence with which to work. Therefore, the previous verse said that after the Supreme Personality of Godhead endeavors, our endeavors begin. We cannot independently endeavor or act upon anything. Therefore, the Lord is Bhuta Bhavanaha. Another specific feature of knowledge given in this verse is that Shabda Brahman is also a form of the Supreme Lord. In his eternal blissful form, Lord Krishna is accepted by Arjuna as Param Brahma. A living entity in the conditioned state accepts something illusory as substantial. This is called maya or avidya, ignorance. Therefore, according to the Vedic knowledge, one must become a devotee, and one must then distinguish between avidya and vidya, which are elaborately explained in the Upanishad. When one is actually on the platform of vidya, he can personally understand the personality of Godhead in his forms like those of Lord Rama, Lord Krishna, and Sankarsana. The Vedic knowledge is described as the breathing of the Supreme Lord, and activities begin on the basis of Vedic knowledge, right? So it comes from the Lord, so we can't neglect it and say, oh, it doesn't apply in Kali Yuga. That means Krishna doesn't breathe in Kali Yuga. He holds his breath, right? Like that's why it's the shortest age, because he has to hold his breath, you know, like that. And so then That way, you know, out of 10, if you divide, you know, the four yugas, you know, by 10 parts, only four is Satya, three in Treta, two in Dwapara, and one in Kali. So therefore, then out of it, then one, he could hold his breath. And that's why, you know, we don't follow Shastra in Kali Yuga. Therefore, the Lord says that when he endeavors or breathes, the material universe comes into existence and various activities generally develop. So only after he does something, then we can do something. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Pranavas Sarva Vede Shu, I am the syllable Om in all the Vedic mantras. Go without Om, they don't work. Vedic mantra begins with the vibration of the transcendental sound Pranava, Omkara. The same transcendental sound is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Abhinnatvan Nama Namino. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 17:113. There is no difference between the holy name of the Lord and the Lord himself. Okay. So end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.